Welcome to How to Money. I'm Joel.
And I am Matt.
And today we're talking blue-collar work and how it can generate more wealth with Ken Rusk.
Our guest today is Ken Rusk. Ken, he specializes in mentoring and has coached hundreds of young people in goal setting, life visualization, career paths, and some sound financial planning as well. He is passionate about helping folks achieve their dreams, regardless of their educational background. And now with his recently published book, Blue Collar Cash, Ken explains that blue collar trades are a source of pride and how you can find your version of happiness by pursuing a good old fashioned craft. Our economy is in desperate need of skilled tradespeople, and we are pumped to talk about that as well. Ken, thank you for joining us here on the podcast.
Great, guys. Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
Hey, we're glad to have you, Ken. And the first question we ask everybody that comes on the show, Matt and I, we love craft beer. We're drinking one now. It's something that we do. We're willing to spend extra money on great beers, you know, while we're intentionally saving and investing for the future. So, like, what's your splurge? What's your craft beer equivalent?
Well, you know, it's funny because I'm a golfer and I really love the game of golf, and I have a bunch of buddies and we travel around the country playing different great courses, and it's just one of those things where invariably I have to come home with a golf shirt. And I got to tell you, I probably have way too many golf shirts in my closet. And every time I come home, my wife is like, okay, another golf shirt. So now the new rule is if I buy one, I have to donate one to somebody else. And that's just fine by me.
There you go. Keep the closet not too packed.
Right, exactly.
Where all have you played? I mean, what I really want to ask is, have you ever traveled abroad to play? Because I hear, you know, about folks sometimes taking trips to Scotland and, you know, playing on some of those old courses, and it's supposed to be amazing.
You know, we just got back from Scotland. We did play the old course, and we played in Ireland, and we've been all over the place. I mean, I've played in the Caribbean. I've played Pete Dye courses in Cabo San Lucas, and all over the place.
That's so cool.
It's just a lot of fun. It's kind of a passion of ours, and it just gives you one more reason to travel. You know.
Yeah, I love it. All right. Well, Ken, tell us about your path into blue collar work. You know, did you go to a 4-year university, or did you know early on that you weren't interested in that road more traveled?
You know, it was pretty simple. I got into working with my hands really early. I started digging ditches when I was 15 years old at a company that was located right next to my high school. And, I just always liked being outside. I liked, you know, having my jeans and my boots on and, you know, my t-shirt and going outside and just grinding out a good solid day. And I did landscaping and I did all kinds of hardscaping, all kinds of things that required me to work with my hands. And I just really loved the control of that. I loved that I could control my input and my own output. And so I tried going to college, but it just didn't work for me.
And so, Ken, like what job was it that made you think, I think I'm going to stick to blue collar work for the rest of my life? Like, this isn't something that's just fun for now. I like getting my hands dirty, but it's something I want to dedicate my life to.
Well, you know, the company that I worked for, where we repaired foundations on old basements, and it was, you know, it was dirty, sloppy work. It was hard work. It was almost like one of those micro dirty jobs situations where you're running jackhammers and you're breathing in dust, and it was just one of those things. But the greatest part about it was very lucrative. And you know, I tended to do that in the summertime when I was in you know, office school, and in the wintertime I worked in the office, and it was really a neat place to work because no matter what position you had, you could kind of control your own income through how much work you were willing to put in, and bonus programs and incentives and that kind of thing. So I just kept earning my way up and seeing that I could again set my own income levels. And it was good because I wanted the same things everybody else did. I wanted, you know, my first used car. I wanted to be able to take my wife my girlfriend at the time out to dinner and buy her a pizza or whatever the heck we wanted to do, go to the movies. And it was neat because I could work and then reward myself. And then I could dream a little bit bigger and work and then reward myself. So I've been with that same company now, for, you know, almost 40 years or a little
over 40 years, actually. Okay, so then, you know, why are you such a believer in more people pursuing blue-collar work in our society?
Well, I look at it this way. I am a huge believer in supply and demand, and that is a power force in our economy that it just can never really be denied. And you know, some people argue it can, but that's only usually when it's manipulated for one reason or another. But for me, you know, I've always kind of been like a contrarian thinker when it comes to opportunities. So I looked at the fact that, you know, nearly everybody is getting, you know, corralled into going to college, whether they need to or want to, whether they have a specific reason to or not. And I always say from the outset, guys, that I'm not an anti-college guy. I'm more of an anti-colleges for everybody guy. And the reason is simple. I mean, if you're going to operate on my knee, or if you're going to build a building or engineer something, or if you're going to teach somebody something or manage people's money, yeah, you need to know everything there is to know about those particular situations. But notwithstanding that, there's such an amazing shift towards everybody's got to go to school. And again, I like to be kind of contrarian in my thinking there when it comes to those opportunities, because, you know, if we are oversupplying the market with non-specific degrees, and what I mean by that is those degrees where people just go to school to get something they're never going to use. You know, they get really good at beer pong for 4 years, but they don't really come out with anything that's really solid. If we're going to oversupply society with that, then that means we're undersupplying society with welders and plumbers and carpenters and electricians. And so the money has to naturally flow that way, because where supply is low and demand is high, that's usually where it goes.
I feel like you're underselling the usefulness of beer pong as a life skill, though, Ken, you know? So, just kidding. Well, it seems like, too, Ken, that we put such a high priority on high school students. We used to experiencing something like shop class. When I was in high school, even, you know, 20 years ago, shop class was kind of on its way out. And so working with your hands, that's just not something that people even have access to as they're growing up in school. So why do you think there's not so much of an emphasis on things like shop class or learning how to fix things like as you're growing up these days?
Well, it's real simple. We had this kind of confluence of two or three different factors that are causing this. So if you look back into the 70s and 80s, they decided to eliminate shop class in favor of, you know, getting computers in classes. And, you know, again, we had to learn computers. That's really important. I understand that. But not at the expense of shop class, of millions of kids discovering, you know, even accidentally how cool carpentry can be, or auto mechanics, yeah, home economics, whatever. And so, you know, you couple that with the situation that now kids, instead of, you know, going in their backyards and building tree forts, you know, they're building it on computer screens, like with like Minecraft and stuff like
exactly,
that. So
yeah,
they're not really experiencing the real sense of hammering a nail. Okay. And or you know, changing the oil in a car or whatever it might be. So I think what happens there is, if you couple those two situations with, again, this societal expectation that if you don't go to school, you won't amount to much, which is crazy on the surface, you kind of have this whole stigma that comes out of, oh, well, you know, well, my kid's going to this school, my kid's going to that school. Oh, well, you know, her kid's just going to be a plumber. Well, okay, let's talk about just going to be a plumber. I know that kid, and that kid now has four vans and, you know, a half a dozen guys, and he's making a killing doing plumbing. So you have to think of it in terms of really what you want your life to look like, and then how to go get it.
Yeah, it's unfortunate, right, that there is such a stigma around, I think, some of these trades at least. And it makes me wonder, when I was a kid growing up, we didn't have shop class. Like, we had tech lab. Shop class was replaced with tech lab, and it was almost maybe a blend between shop class and computers a little bit. But it makes me wonder, you know, how different my life could be right now had I actually gone to shop class, when you're not exposed to some of those things early on. Like, I love what I'm doing now. However, you do kind of wonder, had you learned different skills early on, what kind of effect that would have on you.
Well, you know, I can tell you that I've had some amazing feedback from the book, and some of it has been surprising. I've had emails from people who said, you know, I'm stuck in a cubicle. I'm in my mid-30s. What do I do? Can you help me? And, you know, it's one of those situations where I look at, you know, how sorry that situation is. I remember I rented a car not too long ago, and this is when I first started writing the book, and I had to leave my car at the shop for like 3 weeks because they had a big complicated repair they were making under the dashboard. So they sent me to rent this car. I get to the rental place, and there's a kid standing behind the counter, and he's trying to put his best foot forward. He's got like three different pieces of suits on, and he's doing the thing, you know, he's really trying to make it work. 15 minutes into talking to this kid, he's like, you know, I'm $80,000 in debt. I went for just a regular old bland business degree. I don't know why I did that. Now I'm making, you know, $28,000 at this car rental place. And I don't know how I'm ever going to pay that off. That could have been my first house. And wow. I just feel really bad for those situations where people just kind of like blindly follow, again, this new societal norm that's your only path, because nothing could be further from the truth there.
Yeah. Ken, I want to ask you too, how has COVID-19 impacted maybe your advice in regards to people pursuing blue collar work? Like, have those blue collar jobs in any way been affected by the coronavirus and on your advice for people pursuing blue collar work in general?
This is an amazing silver lining, if there is one, because so many people are staying home. And they're realizing, you know, I think the greatest part about COVID is, you know, now I'm seeing kids ride their bikes in the neighborhood and dogs right. are being walked. And, you know, hey, how about that Frisbee that we used to play with? I mean, those things right. are being thrown around and, you know, backyards are being used, barbecues, whatever you want to do. But the cool thing is families are staying home and they're looking around and they're realizing, you know, there's so many things I could do to make my place better, right? So now, all of a sudden, those people are realizing, I tried to hire a guy to work on my deck and he can't get to me for 4 months. You know, I tried to get this plumber over here and he's charging me a fortune to come now, but he'll charge me less if I wait for 90 days. So it's insane how people are coming to terms real quickly with, man, you know, I got three or four kids. There's no way that all of them can be meant for school. If in fact some of them happen to be more tactile type, you know, people, a gal or a guy, where they would rather work with their hands or pursue a skill or a craft or something like that. So I think if there is a silver lining here, it is anything having to do with recreation or repair or improvement or replacement. Those things are so hot right now that some of these parents are going, you know, maybe we should rethink this automatic process of us just going into debt and sending, you know, kid number 2, 3, and 4 into college.
Yeah. So, you know, you hinted a little bit about supply and demand. So we're going to take a quick break. But after that break, we're going to talk about the demand for these trade jobs. We're going to talk about the opportunity that's there and even to how much one might be able to make. And so we'll get to that right after the break.
All right, we're back from the break. We're talking with Ken Rusk about blue-collar work and how it can actually generate more wealth. And Ken, let's talk about the opportunity that individuals have with blue-collar work. And let's talk a little bit more about supply and demand. Can you give us some specifics on the supply of college graduates and the demand of their industries with that of like the supply of blue-collar work and then the demand for those skilled trades? Can you give us any more specifics on that?
Well, yeah, I mean, I can point to one example. You know, we are right now at one of the highest, most record home building periods in many, many years. And, you know, I personally know of some large track home builders that are setting all-time records. Well, that requires a lot of people doing a lot of things with their hands, from concrete to, you know, to fabrication to carpentry to plumbing to electricians to roofers to landscapers to road builders to anything that you can see that creates or builds something. You know, they're talking about they want to put together this new infrastructure stimulus bill within the government. That's going to put even more pressure on a blue collar crisis that already exists. So again, you know, it's a funny thing, but you actually have Finnish carpenters now that are making more money than family doctors. And guess what? They're doing it without $250,000 of college debt that'll take them 20 years to pay off. One of the things that I like to talk about is, I call it, this asset swing. And it's a real simple story, but let's assume I go into college and I'm spending $40,000 to $50,000 a year. Okay, 4 years later, that's $160,000 to $200,000, right? Now, I'm paying that money and I'm not earning anything at the time. So let's conversely talk about a high demand job like carpentry, for example, or plumbing or electricians. So those folks are going right into a job that pays them $40,000 to $50,000 a year to start. So 4 years later, their asset base is plus 200. The other guy or gal, their asset base is negative 200. So you're talking about a $400,000 swing in the first 4 years of a young person's life.
Wow.
That's huge when you think about a house, a car, starting your savings accounts, maybe your 401k.
Yeah,
that's a big swing. Whenever I tell that story, I get a lot of parents that look at each other like, "Holy cow, what were we thinking?" And it's just one of those things where it's the information's right there. I mean, I'm not making this up. It's right there. You just have to look at it and really take a good look at, you know, what am I really doing for my kid and his financial future?
Yeah. I mean, and like you said, you're not against college, right? Like if that's something that you want to pursue and you know you want to pursue it, then yes, higher education is the right answer there. But yeah, I agree with you. I think, you know, blindly kind of going down the path of college and not exactly knowing what you want to do, you know, and paying a lot of money for that isn't the, you know, the most wise move.
Yeah, and not assessing the alternatives.
That's why we're talking with you, Ken. You know, you're talking about like some of these skill trades, right? You talk about carpentry, an electrician. What other industries are going to need more workers here in the future? You call what's currently happening in the labor market essentially a crisis, you know, in the American workforce, but you also consider the crisis to be this golden opportunity for many folks. So yeah, can you talk to us more about this growing demand and like specific industries and jobs as well?
Well, sure. I mean, I can tell you that anything in energy, whether it's new energy or existing energy, you know, you're talking about windmills and solar and all those kinds of things. You're talking about even still natural gas and oil extraction. I mean, those things are red hot and out in certain areas of the country. You can make a killing doing that. We're seeing for welders and millwrights, we're seeing just incredible amounts of money. I know a gal, she was fighting to get through her 2-year degree, and it took her like several years, and she had a couple of kids, and so that interrupted it and whatever. And she needed one more class to get over the finish line on this 2-year degree. And she had asked her friend, she says, "What should I do here?" And her friend said, "You know, I took this welding class. It was a blast. You should give it a shot." And so she took this welding class, and she was very detailed, and she was very calm, and she was very patient, and she was really good at welding. And before she finished the class, she had a job. And now she stands on top of 300-foot windmills, and she's making about $150,000 a year doing that. And she never thought for a second that would be anything she wanted to do. So
that's incredible.
I mean, when you think of that, you know, we're seeing $38, $42, $44, $46, $52 an hour for, you know, electricians, plumbers, welders, carpenters. And those are the people that are just working within some other company. I mean, Lord knows that if you find a way to maybe get busy enough and you have a couple of people working for you, well then, you know, the sky's the limit at that point. Now you're talking about, you know, big money there.
Yeah, yeah. In your book, Ken, you mentioned that some plumbers in Atlanta coming straight out of tech school are making $90,000 a year.
Yeah.
I was like, wow, okay, all right. So
that's pretty good.
Yeah, that's pretty insane. Obviously, there are lots of blue-collar workers who make less than doctors and lawyers. You kind of made that distinction. But what sets apart the blue-collar workers who end up being able to make higher salaries from the ones who end up having a career where they make more of like an average income?
Well, you know, that's the first three chapters, because to me, what sets people apart is what I call the entrepreneurial spirit. And you can be an entrepreneurial employee for somebody else as well. But whenever I think, and this is what I do when I coach people, one of the first things that I talk about is, you know, why are you here? Why are you working? What's your end game look like? And they look at you like, you know, you're from Mars when you ask them that question. I literally get them to draw it out. I will tell you that I've had many people in my day. I get a white poster board and a box of Crayola crayons, you know, the old 64 box of Crayola crayons.
Nice.
And I have them draw out what they want their life to look like. And I'm talking about, are you a house person, a condo person, an apartment person in the city? Are you a pickup truck person or a minivan person or electric car person? You know, let's get some detail here. Are you a dog person or a cat person? And if so, what kind of dog and what would you name it? What's your hobbies look like? What's your give back moment look like to society? Draw all that out. You know, what do your vacations feel like to you? And then you create that old that puzzle of nirvana that you would really want to go after. And I can tell you guys that to the person, once they get that picture completed in their mind, they begin to discover all the entrepreneurial characteristics like perseverance and you know resilience and morals and character and all those things that you know drive and all the things that you need to become an entrepreneur. It's almost like those characteristics are just buried in your closet behind the shoes you haven't worn in a long time.
Behind those golf shirts, Ken.
Yeah, they're stuck behind the golf shirts. And it's amazing the evolution of the human mind when someone sees exactly where they're going, because then the entrepreneurial spirit kicks in and they basically look at you and say, hey, thanks for the training, Ken. Now just get out of my way and let me go do it. And I can tell you that sets them apart is people that know what they want from their life. They have their comfort, peace, and freedom picture all drawn out. And those that don't, those that just live for Friday.
Mm. Yeah. I mean, so on How to Money, we often talk about the why behind your money. And I think sometimes folks might be tired of hearing us talk about that, but we feel it is so important to identify that why. Because once you have that purpose, once you have something that you're working towards, like you figure everything else out. It's like all the details, all the nuts and bolts kind of fall into place and you figure out how it is that you want to achieve, you know, the vision that you have for your future. So
those goals of saving and investing more become less onerous, less burdensome, and they're more like they're freeing. It's like, oh yeah, I'm doing that because it's for me, you know, as opposed to because some financial person, somebody who thinks about money a lot told me that I should.
You know, we could go on with this particular part for hours because one of the things that I try to do with anyone, especially young people that I meet with, is I try to get the retirement part of their life out of the way. And what I mean by that is if somebody walks up to you or you go in an interview and or someone says, hey, I'm going to pay you $45,000 a year to do this job. The first thing I want you to say is, thank you for paying me $42,000 a year. Because I want you to eliminate that first $3,000 from your mind. You never had it. You never got it. It was never in your paycheck. You never saw it. You never experienced it. So therefore, you can't spend it. Because if you take the first $60 of your money and throw it into a 401k when you're 21, by the time you're 31, you can stop saving money and have over $1 million in your 401k account. So imagine being 21 and sitting at the bar with your buddy and you're sharing, you know, a couple of beers and you look over at him and you say, yeah, I'm 21. My retirement is covered. It's spoken for. It's done. I mean, you're light years ahead of everybody else on the planet who frets saving for retirement almost their entire life.
Yeah, that's true.
When you think of the power of young money, it's really insane, you know, how you can make those things happen for yourself and just not even think about it anymore. And this is simple stuff that it's so intensely powerful that it amazes me that they don't teach this stuff in school.
Yeah, I agree. I think a lot of our listeners have reached out and they're like, hey, man, I've never heard some of these things, like some of the things that Matt and I talk about on the show, were what, 270 episodes in, and it's like it's just a shame that there's no shop class in school and that there's no personal finance class in school. Hey, Ken, we have so many more questions for you that we want to get to, including like how people make that transition into a skilled trade or into blue collar work, and we'll get to a few of those questions right after this break.
All right, we are back from the break, and we are talking with Ken Rusk, author of Blue Collar Cash. And Ken, we've been talking about kind of how the world sees blue collar work. We've talked about now the opportunity that exists out there, right? Just how I think many, many more folks need to consider a skilled trade over just blindly going to college. Let's talk now about how to kind of make that happen. You know, you touched a little bit on just some of the different degrees, some of the different programs that you need to take in order to partake in some of these skilled trades. What does that normally look like? You know, what are the education requirements for a lot of these jobs? Like, obviously, you don't need that four-year degree, but, you know, do you need to attend like a two-year trade school typically?
Well, you know, it's funny because on my Facebook page, you know, we have a long discussion. We've had it for years now about, you know, the best ways to do this. And every time I put up the question, you know, is it better to go to a tech school or to an apprenticeship? It's crazy the amount of engagement that I get on that question from
people. So it's hotly contested, then.
Oh my God, is it ever? I can tell you, it appears though that the apprenticeship wins, and I'll tell you why. And both of these paths are perfectly correct, just so you know. But because there's such a demand for anyone who's willing to put down their Game Boy and pick up a hammer. Once you find an individual like this as a boss, you tend to throw everything you have at that person in like a really concentrated way. So instead of taking maybe, you know, 7 or 8 years to learn and get good at something, you can accomplish that same goal in just a couple thousand, maybe 3,000-4,000 hours. And so there's a lot of people that say, jump right in, you know, find someone that's good at what they're doing and just, you know, glean everything you can off of somebody like that. And one of the reasons that is because, you know, the other issue that we have is the skilled tradesmen are beginning to retire, tradesmen and tradeswomen. And, you know, for every five electricians that retires right now, only one is coming on board to replace them. So, and this is going to create even more pressure on that industry. So, yeah, it's a good idea to go to school, to go to a tech school. If you're going to do something really detailed, real specific, like electrical work, that kind of thing, welding, that kind of thing. If you're doing something more handsy where you're, you know, it's more of like a carpenter trade or, you know, bricklaying or stone masonry work, that kind of thing, you know, you can do a little more apprentice work with that. And, you know, it's insane. I have a guy that that worked on an outdoor grill area in my house, and he works with hand cut stone. He's an artist. It's amazing to watch this guy work. And just to give you an idea on the opportunity, here's a guy that shows up in my yard every day with his brand new pickup truck, and he comes out with his jeans and his work boots and his t-shirt, and he's got his coffee in his hand. He's got Led Zeppelin cranked up really loud, and he's got his three or four people that come to work with him, and they build these amazing pieces of art, whether it's stone fences or gates or kitchens or whatever. And this guy wants to retire. He's making north of six figures in a big way, like not just 100. He's making north of 2. And he has no one to leave this company to.
Wow.
So you just imagine this guy. I had to wait 6 months for this guy. You just imagine the reputation and the work that this guy has and the list of customers that are constantly calling him back to do more stuff. And if you were, you know, a bright-eyed young guy or gal that said, hey, you know what, I think I see an opportunity here. You could work with this guy for a couple of years and take over his company and have your life set for you. So, that's crazy. Happening all over the place. I hear that story all the time.
Yeah, in various different industries, right?
Right.
Yeah, I think we're all for, we like the idea of jumping into something, yeah, jumping in the deep end, immediately making some money, even if you're not making a lot. But it's, man, it feels so good to not have to fork out a lot of money for education. But that being said, you know, you mentioned how some of these skills, like they do require some specialized training. What is the range of cost on some of these different programs that folks need to go to? Is it all over the board, or yeah, is it within like a tighter range than we would think?
Yeah, it's typically for, I read the other day that a lot of these tech schools are between $8,000 and $12,000, sometimes $13,000 a year to get that done. But here's the difference. The difference is when you're going to these places, you're also working. And so you're making money at the same time while you're doing this.
Okay.
And you can work a lot of hours while you're in some of these schools. So, it's kind of a school and work combination in many cases. So it's not like you're going to Uncle Sam and borrowing all this money for these classes that you're never going to have to repay, because you don't have to think about, you know, some of these people, then they go to school, they're also borrowing room and board and they're borrowing meal plans and everything else. Yeah. Well, you don't have to do that in this case. So it's a much, much slimmer way to get through an education and then get right to work making some really good money.
So, Ken, for our younger listeners who haven't really started their career yet, or for, you know, parents of like late middle school, high school kids, and they're like, oh man, they're good with their hands. They really enjoy building stuff. What are the next steps to getting started, right? We've talked about trade schools, but what are the best ways for the younger generation if they're like, man, that sounds good and I want to avoid the debt. I see how bad things have gotten for my peers who have graduated college with tons of debt and then don't have a job lined up. How do they get started in a blue collar career?
Well, you know, this is probably one of the most heartening kind of feedback that I've gotten from the book, because what's happening is parents are reading this book and then they're reading it first and they're giving it to their kids to read. And they're having these amazing conversations, honest conversations from their kids that they wouldn't have had otherwise, because it just opens up a whole new line of thinking that is, you know, that is anti the typical societal norm of just corralling people through. So in that situation, I think what you do is real simple. You get either part-time jobs or you get summer jobs in areas that you have some interest. You know, if you leave my office and go the 2 miles to the freeway, you're going to pass, you know, 25 to 40 help wanted signs. So you have the ability to job shop like you've never had before, especially if you're willing to do something and work with your hands and be outside and do those kinds of things. So you can always be an intern or a very part-time apprentice for, you know, carpentry, plumbing, electrical, any of those types of trades, and just immerse yourself in it and see if any of those things grab your attention. Okay. That's a really good way to do it. Another thing that's gaining steam in popularity are these gap years, where instead of jumping right into school, you tend to take a little time off and you experience some of these things and see if there's anything out there that really hits you. But I can tell you, if you spend any time around a construction site or any time, even in some of these manufacturing places where they make these cool things, there's just this way of you kind of understanding and kind of almost your mind draws itself to what you might be good at. And the problem is that only you know what you could be good at. Only you know what you were meant to be. Only you know what your life could look like. So if you pair up, I always call it this way. Instead of waiting for life to happen to you, you have to happen to life. So I think if you can find a vocational passion and pair that up with some really great opportunities that are out there right now, you're going to have your true value, your true comfort, peace, and freedom. That's for sure.
Ken, like several times here, you know, when you're talking about folks considering blue collar trades, you know, you say a guy or a gal. Can you speak specifically to what it looks like for a woman to enter the blue collar world? What do you think are the best opportunities for women in the blue collar space?
You know, I've had the opportunity to interview three or four gals that have done just that. One of them was a YouTube influencer. And, you know, there's a heck of a lot of that going on. You know, I don't know much about it. It's kind of the Wild West, but there's a whole lot of incubator businesses that are happening on the internet. And again, those are things that people start right out of their houses. And they've done some just amazing things. I've talked to some influencers who you just can't even believe what they're doing. The other gal that I mentioned earlier was the welder. I mean, you know, women seem to have patience that men don't have in detail. So when it comes to welding, that's a really, really sought after characteristic. And I think there's all kinds of opportunities in that particular space. And once again, you can even see some gal welders on the internet, and they've built these whole communities around what they're doing. It's really cool. I interviewed a gal who left a waitress job to start selling bread for a bread baker. He retired, and now she built her own bread store where she's now baking 2,000 loaves a week for the local businesses around.
Wow.
And she had no skills, no education whatsoever. And then another gal, you know, one of the things that I talk a lot about is be willing to do things that other people aren't. Okay. This gal, believe it or not, started driving a gravel truck, a dump truck. And now she's got 12 trucks. She runs her own gravel truck company and she's killing it. And I just love it because here's this really nice petite gal with this hard hat on. And she stands in front with her arms crossed in front of her fleet of these huge 12 Kenworths that she's got. And it's just a really awesome photo. And I'm just so, I'm so proud of her. But you got to remember this, if there's a shortage of blue collar workers, and most people typically think of that as a male dominated industry, then if you're a gal and you're willing to do it, man, you can write your own ticket right now.
Yeah, you're probably going to stand out.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. That's cool. Hey, Ken, I know too that we have a lot of listeners who work in a desk job and maybe they're working from home right now and maybe they're even making decent money, but there are also a lot of people are just tired of it. And, you know, just the way you feel working in front of a computer for 8 to 10 hours a day, right? And blue collar work, especially after this conversation, might start to sound more appealing. So how do you suggest people who feel that pull start to make that transition?
You know, one of the things that you can do nowadays that you couldn't do years ago, you know, if you were trying to open your own company years ago, you know, it required accountants and lawyers and, you know, bookkeeping and, you know, pieces of graph paper and pencils and all that, other adding machines and all that. Well, now, you know, you can run your own business off of a cell phone. That has made it the barrier to entry just kind of disappear for a lot of people. So what I've seen a lot of, which I think is really cool, is almost like a transitioning from the cubicle to being your own boss. And what I've seen, like, I'll give you a great example. There's an entire community out there that does woodworking, and they build furniture, they build tables, they reclaim old barns. They work with wood and they love it. And what they did is they took like a weekend hobby and they turned it into a side hustle. And they literally started, and I'm talking about hundreds of different people here, not just a few. They have a community now. And, you know, one guy's building these amazing, you know, river tables with lacquer in them, and they're just gorgeous. And another one is doing rocking chairs. Another one's doing this and doing that. But what they did was, you know, they got on the internet, they built themselves a website, they put these products out there, they sold them on the weekends, and then slowly they transitioned away from their day job to just doing this woodworking for a living. And again, why? Because no one else is doing it and there's demand for it. So, you know, I think if you're sitting in a cubicle right now wondering, or you have a weekend hobby or a skill or a craft that you really like, you might want to try that slow transition away from what you're doing and getting that side hustle to be lucrative enough that it can support you and what you need to do.
Yeah, I love that. It doesn't necessarily have to be a hard transition, you know, like a clear mark where, okay, I used to be an attorney, but now I paint watercolors. You know, like it doesn't need to be this, right, this dramatic thing, you know, or not watercolors, but yeah, now I'm a stonemason. I like how it truly can be something that is more transitional. And that's something too that you can do when you have put yourself in a good position financially, right? Yeah. So if you have taken those steps early on to make sure that your retirement is going to be in a good place, there is a little less pressure to continue down that professional path that might be causing you so much stress, or literally sitting at a desk, you know, for 8 hours, like Joel talked about, like that might literally be killing you. And instead being able to get outside would just do so much for yourself.
Yeah. And this is a really important point. And if, you know, for the listeners out there, one of the things that you have to make sure that you do, if you're going to do this, is you have to turn this from a someday goal into a two-day goal. I mean, this is something that you need to say, okay, I'm going to start working on this right now. And you need to give yourself a finite amount of time to make that happen. Like, let's assume you say, okay, I'm going to transition over 4 years. Okay. So now you're working from 4 years from now backward towards today. So you literally have, you know, 200 weeks to figure out, from where that transition ends and you're in your new career back up all the way to today, and what little mini goals you have to hit along the way to make that happen. You mentioned financially, you mentioned, you know, product wise, you mentioned the marketing wise, setting up your company, getting the website done, and just working yourself back to now, you know, setting up weekend places where you can sell these crafts or these products, wherever that might be, and work your way from 4 years or 3 years or 5 years, whatever you want it to be, working that backwards toward today. So you have a really clear begin date, an end date, and an absolutely path to get there. Otherwise, this will just be one of those frustrations that kind of haunts you for the next 10 or 15 years that you never really get done.
Well, Ken, that's some awesome practical advice to wrap this conversation up. Thank you so much for joining us today. And where can our listeners find out more about you and what you're up to?
Well, if you go to kenrusk.com, that's kenrusk.com, you can see what we're doing there. You can also go to Ken Rusk Official, which is my Facebook page, which has a lot of great stuff there. We post every couple of days, and we have a blog as well. And you know, you'll see the book at Amazon. You'll see it at Barnes & Noble's Indie Books as well. Don't forget to support those individual bookstores. You can find it pretty much anywhere books are sold.
Awesome. Well, Ken, thanks so much, man, for joining us on this, you know, for this conversation. I feel like there's been a lot of insight here that our listeners, you know, it's going to cause them to think through things in a way that they haven't before. And I think that can only be a good thing. So we really appreciate your time. Thank you.
Well, you're welcome. And to everybody out there, you got this. And let's go make it happen. You know, I've got confidence in you. I know you can make it happen. So just start today and get her done.
You're the man. Thanks, Ken.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Joel, man, what a great conversation we just had here with Ken Rusk. You know, when we talk about money here on the show, like we can talk about it in a few different ways. Like you can, there's different ways that you can earn money. There's different ways that you can manage your money. And so spending is, you know, included in that and being frugal and whatnot. And then there's things that you can do on the back end of that as well, which is like investing your money for the long term. And we don't often talk about some alternate ways that you can earn money, right? Like we talk about side gigs and things like that and starting your own business some.
But or getting a raise and talking to your employer about
that. Yeah, like, exactly. Yeah. Like those are all good avenues, but we have not yet talked about, you know, not going to college and just the opportunities that exist out there for skilled trades. And I'm so glad that we got to talk with Ken and a true professional. He's lived it and he's advising others on this as well.
And he's got a balanced approach to it. He's like, I'm not the anti-college guy. Exactly. And that's great because college is for a lot of people, but it's also
for a lot of professionals. Like there's some professions that you absolutely need it for sure.
I'm not, like he said, I don't want a surgeon operating on me who hasn't been to college. And I completely agree with him. But there are a lot of people who a blue collar career makes a whole lot more sense. And my big takeaway, well, let's get to that.
Let's hear it.
Is the supply and demand factor and supply and demand, basic economic principle. And when you look at the supply in the labor force right now, there's not a whole lot of supply when it comes to people that are willing to work in blue collar industries, but there's a whole lot of demand. And so that does mean you'll be able to make a whole lot more money oftentimes in the blue collar space than you would be even after getting a 4-year college degree. One of the things I read in Ken's book, he said that 1 in 4 college graduates makes just as much as a high school graduate does. That people go through all that work, all that time, all the debt load that they take on. And then at the end, what they have to show for it is they're making just as much as someone who didn't even spend their 4 years in that way and take on all that debt. That's a sobering statistic. And so, yeah, it's really important, especially for young kids or people maybe feeling like they're in a dead-end career that they don't enjoy anymore. Well, look at the demand out there and be part of the supply, that potentially makes a whole lot more money than you're currently making or than you otherwise might if you took the traditional career path.
I love it, dude. I'm glad that was your takeaway. Yeah, you want to be that supply. You want to be able to meet that demand that's out there. You know, like he even talked about the stonemason. He's planning his workout for 6 months in advance. Like that is insane. And it's a perfect example that that demand is there. All right, but now it's my turn. Time for my little takeaway. And I say little takeaway because I feel like it wasn't this huge, you know, complex idea. But it was rather simple, and it was when he was talking about a gap year, right? I think in our culture, we don't prize the gap year. I think a lot of times if you hear somebody's taking a gap year, they're just like, oh, you're just wasting time.
Slacker.
Yeah, you see that as like, oh, you must be trying to go find yourself. If you're lucky, maybe you can do some traveling, that kind of thing. But instead, the way Ken presented it, this is a great opportunity to decide and to really think through if it makes sense to take on a boatload of student loan debt, which most folks are doing these days. If it makes sense to dedicate 4 years of your life towards something that you're not even totally sure where that's going to go. And so I loved how he took that gap year script and he kind of flipped it on his head a little bit. And he pointed out how this is a great opportunity to maybe discover something that you have never even considered doing before. It's not something that you learned about in high school because they're not teaching it in high schools anymore. But it's an opportunity for you to discover a passion of yours, something that you're really good at and something that could also allow you to make a lot of money. This just gets me excited for all the high school students out there who might be hearing this because I think this really could be life-changing. This yeah. doesn't have to be gap year and now I'm going to go to New Zealand kind of thing. This could be like gap year. Let's think about what trade I could potentially do, something that I already have an inclination towards.
Well, I don't think Americans are allowed in New Zealand anyway, right?
Well, not now at least. Yeah. But I liked how he said just being on a work site, sometimes your mind will naturally find what it is that you want to do. Like you naturally will gravitate towards it. It's sort of like, you know, like Harry Potter when the wand chooses him. I think maybe the skill can choose the individual as you're kind of drawn to that. And I like how that can maybe just be a different approach to a career.
Yeah, I think that's a great takeaway, man. I feel like he framed a gap year in just a wonderful way where a gap year makes a whole lot of sense. And I think it makes sense for more and more people right now as the value of a college degree with coronavirus
right.
and remote learning is coming into question even more.
Exactly, so, yeah, man.
Good stuff. All right, let's get back to the beer that we had on the show today, Matt. This one was called Rhymes with Purple from Bramari Brewing. You picked this Berliner Weiss with a bunch of different berries in it up for us while you were in Asheville recently. What were your thoughts on this beer?
Well, first, I will say it is very, very purple. It's like as we poured it, I don't know if I've ever seen a more purple-red beer, but it rhymes with purple, and it's got with like six different berries going on in it, and it is very tart, man. That's the first thing that I noticed. It was really tart, but at the same time, it had like a nice medium body, and so it was kind of lush, kind of coated your tongue a nice little bit, but with it being a Berliner Weiss as well. It meant it had that kind of chewy, weedy finish on the tail end. So it was a fun, kind of refreshing beer, but while at the same time, you know, it had that substance to back it up. I really enjoyed it, man.
Yeah, it was like a bouquet of berries, I would say.
Yeah, yeah. But not like overly perfumey.
No,
you know, like
no,
it was
yeah.
all in the flavor. Not because sometimes you smell it, you know, you kind of give it a sniff before you taste it, and you're like, oh, it's like too much perfume, you know, but not this one. It's all in the taste.
Yeah, a little bit velvety, I thought, but just like a richness from all the fruit that's present and definitely a nice amount of tartness at the same time. This is a well-balanced Berliner Weiss that I really enjoyed. I love fruited beers. I love fruited sours. This one was really tasty. So yeah, mad props to Bramari for this one. And thanks to you for picking it up.
Yeah, man. Happy to. Bramari, they're making a lot of good beer up that way, up there in Asheville, North Carolina. So look them up if you happen to be in the area. And dude, that's going to be it for this episode. Listeners can find our show notes up on our website at howtomoney.com. And we'll make sure to link to Ken's sites there as well.
Yeah, and if you're a new listener and you enjoyed this conversation with Ken, well, we have a lot of other interviews that you can check out as well with lots of interesting people. And you can check out all of our episodes up on howtomoney.com. And don't forget to subscribe on your podcatcher so you never miss an upcoming episode. All right, Matt, until next time, best friends out.
Best friends out.